And it is today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman on this Tuesday afternoon. It's election day in Miami-Dade and other counties, but not in Broward. And this hour, we're at your service with independent South Florida reporters. First, we have investigative reporter Dan Christensen, who edits the Broward Bulldog. He'll give some Broward insights. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls. Welcome to you, Dan Christensen. Good to see you again.
Hey, it's good to see you, Joe.
And also with us is regular contributor Dan Ricker, who publishes The Watchdog Report. He covers South Florida government and politics. Welcome back to you.
Always a pleasure, Bonnie.
All right, Dan Christensen, let's start with you, even though it is election day. So yesterday's edition of Broward Bulldog, your headline, The Governor and the Felon, the Profitable Private Partnership of Rick Scott and Ken Jenny. So why is Ken Jenny back in the news, and what's the relationship with Governor Scott?
Well, all this began with the resignation recently of Kimberly Kisland, who was a commissioner on the board of Broward Health, which is the North Broward Hospital District, a tax-supported government entity in Broward County. And she had been appointed over the summer by Governor Scott, and it turned out that she had given immunized testimony before the grand jury that investigated Ken Jenny back in 2007, and also described in documents filed by the government at the time for her involvement in his scheme, the scheme that led to his guilty plea. So I wrote a story about that a couple of weeks ago, and then I had kept asking the governor, governor's office, to explain basically why, you know, what had happened and how she had been appointed and why they didn't know about this, because they said they didn't know about it. And they also said that there had been a background check conducted. Well, they wouldn't talk to me, and so I decided to dig a little bit further and found these connections between the governor and Mr. Jenny. And this was back when Ken was the sheriff. They were both investors and board members at a company called CyberGuard, which was a computer security firm based up in Deerfield Beach. And Ken, the governor, who was then a private investor by the name of Richard Scott, funneled hundreds of thousands of dollars Ken's way by recommending that he be appointed to the board of directors of CyberGuard. So Ken started collecting a lot of stock options, which by the time the company was sold in 2005 amounted to $375,000 worth of cash and stock in the company that took them over, a company called Secure Computing. The governor made about, appears to have made about $60 million from that deal as well. So I reported on that, reported about, you know, how the deal unfolded and everything, and I tried to get both Ken Jenny and the governor to explain why the governor wanted him on the board. Because if you will recall, part of the charges against Ken, as a matter of fact, all of the charges against Ken revolved around, they were, I believe the technical charges were mail fraud and income tax, filing false income tax returns. But the bottom line was they all involved benefits that he had received from vendors. And so I was trying to find out, first and foremost, whether or not CyberGuard ever became a vendor. The sheriff had told me years ago that it was not a vendor, so I don't know. So there's a mystery here as to why now Governor Scott had wanted the sheriff of Broward County on that board of directors.
Both of you gentlemen, I'd like to hear your comments on Charlie Crist running for governor as a Democrat. How do the Democratic faithful look at that, and what kind of ammunition will be used against him as a waffler?
That, you got to understand, I mean, Governor
Dan
Crist,
Ricker,
yeah, Governor Crist, you know, since 94 has an extensive Republican record. There's a slight blurb in 2010 when he ran as an independent, and now he's a Democrat.
I remember way back when they called him Chain Gang
Charlie.
Well,
you had the Chain Gang Charlie because he instituted that, having prisoners work again on the freeways and stuff, cutting the grass and everything else. He also was, you know, Commissioner of Education. He was the Attorney General, all under the Bush, Jeb Bush administration. And you know, he's got a tremendous public record of, you know, comments, and they're all over the place. You know, the Democrats are absolutely anyone but Governor Rick Scott, and they look at Charlie as potentially their savior. He definitely has more name recognition, but this next year is going to be one of the most vicious ongoing campaigns that we will see in a long time. The governor's got over $100 million probably by the time all is said and done. Governor Chris wants to tap into the Obama fundraising tap route, and we'll see how well he's able to do that. But this is going to be a rumble in the jungle.
You're talking about negative advertising.
Yes.
Dan Christensen, your thoughts.
Yeah, and lots of it. From everything I hear, the bet money is still that ultimately the governor will prevail because he's got a pile of money, and more is rolling in every day from what I understand. But I thought it was emblematic in Mark Caputo's story in the Herald today about Governor Crist, or former Governor Crist, announcing that he's going to be a candidate here. There's a couple of paragraphs that talk about how Mark had spoken with George Lemieux, who used to be Charlie's best bud, and as a matter of fact,
the maestro.
Right, Charlie appointed him to the Senate when Mel Martinez left, and even George Lemieux is quoted as saying that he doesn't know who Charlie is these days. So if that's where it's starting out from, it's gonna get pretty low by a year from now.
How does leadership in the Democratic Party feel about him running?
I think the leadership sees it as a possibility, but it's the rank and file you have to worry about. First of all, the Democrats on off non-presidential years have always had a problem getting the big turnout in the surge that they get during a presidential mm-hmm. election. You saw that in 2008, you saw it in 2012, and yet the legislature is dominated by Republicans in the off years, etc., elections. I think the issue with Charlie eventually is going to be within the Democratic Party is he's not Governor Scott, and there's a point in a campaign where, I mean, John Kerry kind of ran the same kind of thing where he wasn't George Bush 2. Mm-hmm. And that only goes so far. And while the Democrats absolutely go bananas when they think of Rick Scott, the question is, will they be able to take that enthusiasm and make it into a determination during the election where the Democrats have a slight edge, and there's also that big swing independents, that they get this big voter turnout, or as Dan says, you got it to a certain extent, give the edge to the current governor. He is the incumbent.
Do you think that most voters, you know, look at him askance because first he's a Republican, then he's an independent, then he's a Democrat? I mean, does that have an impact?
What I don't understand through this whole thing is why the Democrats have basically rolled over to allow Charlie Crist to come in and, you know, be crowned king of the state.
Who else do they have?
Yeah, Nan
well,
Rich.
That's
their problem.
Exactly. That tells you that Democratic Party is in quite disarray, that there is no one that any of us or anybody else apparently can name who is gubernatorial timber in the state of Florida. I don't understand the failings of the Democratic Party being able to muster a candidate and having to rely on a former Republican who, let's face it, does not seem to share the views of most Democrats.
Excluding Bill Nelson. I mean, he's the only, you know, singular
he's got a job.
Democrat with a statewide base, but he's just been reelected. He's, you know, why he's got seniority in the Senate, U.S. Senate. Why try to do a rough and tumble race here, you know, for the state? I've predicted all along that Nelson would not get involved in this gubernatorial race.
I just have one more question going back to the Ken Jenny Governor Scott link. How is that stand right now? Have you heard from the governor's office? I mean, has there been any response?
No. No, they have not spoken to me. They just say the governor's unavailable. But they said that before he left for Japan.
So. Right. He is in Japan. So, but it's the media, or strike that, the candidates and elected leaders have gotten to the point, I don't know, it's evolved over the last 10 or 12 years where I'm not going to take that question. Or, you know, I mean, it's
So they just can
ignore it. They just ignore it, and it's changed the dynamics of reporting.
You know, well, Dan, it's funny. I think that the question that the stuff about his involvement with Ken Jenny is in a way it's old news. This happened a while ago, even though nobody really knew about it. But what's interesting here is why won't they discuss the appointment process here and what happened? Why is it that, you know, this woman was appointed and yet obviously
Kisslin had, you're talking about.
Yes, Ms. Kisslin. I mean, she was involved in Ken's scheme. She testified under a grant of immunity. And the governor's office didn't know about this despite a background check. So it seems to me that there's something wrong with the vetting process up there. And that's originally what I had hoped to find and write about, was what's the flaw here? Was it the Florida Department of Law Enforcement that apparently did the background check? Did they find something and it was ignored? We don't know. And I think that as the chief executive of the state, he has an obligation to explain that. He doesn't have an obligation to talk about his private business dealings, but he does have an obligation to talk about that.
Yeah, they're two separate issues.
And Bonnie, this is important. I mean, the governor, in the course of his four-year term, will appoint about 4,000 people. I run every week some of his appointments all over the state. Mm-hmm. Someone just asked me at the county commission why I do that. And I said, listen, I don't know what's going on in Eustis, but I got apparently readers there. And when you run some of these people, you know, not all the time, but you get feedback. Either they're a great choice or, oh my God, did you know, you know, they did this, this, this. And you see that periodically in these little misfires. There's a lot of people that he has to appoint. And that's has a huge effect on the state over the course of the years, because they also are judges, et cetera. And it really allows the governor to put his imprint, if depending on how he does it, on a particular branch of government or on different boards.
The voice of Dan Ricker, independent journalist, publisher of the and editor of the Watchdog Report, and that's watchdogreport.net.
Right.
And Dan Christensen is an award-winning former investigative reporter for the Miami Herald and Daily Business Review, and founder and editor of Broward Bulldog, which is browardbulldog.org. And it's Topical Currents. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're joined by reporters Dan Christensen and Dan Ricker of the Watchdog Report. Dan Ricker, I know you have a little bit of a scoop you want to break, but I also want to give a little bit of a plug for the Broward Bulldog. They're having a fourth anniversary fundraiser. Why don't you give us a quick word about that, Dan Christensen?
Okay, it's next Tuesday, November 12th, at Vibe Las Olas, which is right next door to Yolo Restaurant downtown.
It's a restaurant, Vibe.
Yeah, it's actually a nightclub.
Oh, okay.
And the restaurant, it's part of Yolo, which is right next door on Las Olas at the intersection with 4th Avenue.
And Broward Bulldog, of course, is an independent and nonprofit.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about Broward Bulldog. We're a 501c3. Contributions to us are tax deductible. And we were I started it 4 years ago after I got laid off from the Miami Herald.
You and a lot of others.
And yeah, I'm afraid. And they, you know, the fun never stops, apparently, because there's been, you know, there are more people that not there and at other papers around South Florida. It's a continuing thing. Anyway, our goal is to plug the gap, I suppose, provide investigative reporting that the papers are no longer doing. They still do some. I mean, don't get me wrong. They do some fine work, but there's not enough of them. They'll be the first ones to tell you that.
And Dan Ricker, you've got a little bit of a Miami-Dade scoop you want to give us all.
Well, two things. One, I ran, or in the Broward section of watchdogreport.net, there is all the information for the Broward Bulldog, because they're in their fourth year, and I'm closing in on my 15th year, just surviving four or how many years, whatever it is a big deal in today's world if you're trying to do the media.
With so many blogs and things going on.
Well, there's the blogs, but also it's just 4 years is a big deal. 15 years is a big deal. The last month or so, I've been covering the Inspector General Selection Committee for the Miami-Dade County position. It had been filled by Chris Mizell since 1998. He retired last year. They've had a selection committee chaired by Kathy Fernandez-Rundle, the state attorney, as the chair, and four other members. And they've been interviewing 12 candidates, all of them some very fine candidates, I might add. And yesterday at about 1:30, 2 o'clock, they picked who the name that they will now send to the county commission after a background check has been done, extensive one has been done on the person. And ultimately, the county commission will vote yes or no on that candidate that this selection committee has selected to be the next inspector general. Now, I just want to say to all the other media outlets out there that no one else was there. And if you're going to use this information this week after I break it, I'd appreciate an attribution. But the selection committee has picked Mary Cagle, and she's been a former state prosecutor, one of the top deputies to the state attorney here in Miami-Dade, is currently the statewide director of the Children's Legal Service of the part of the Department of Children and Families here in Miami. She's very seasoned. She's an attorney. She has a good temperament. She has good leadership skills. And if she gets through the background check, which I believe she will, given her experience, her name will be presented to the county commission in December, probably, for them to either say yay or nay. But it's an incredibly important job because the inspector general not only does Miami-Dade County and its $6.5 billion budget, but it does the Miami-Dade Public Schools, handles all the GOB bond money, the $2.9 billion that went out.
Obligation.
Here at the school district, there's a $1.2 billion bond that they're keeping an eye on and watching over. And if the Jackson Memorial Hospital $830 million bond comes through today with the voters, they'll have that activity to monitor. So it's a huge position.
And touching on that bond issue that the voters are right. addressing today, Michael Putney wrote that he thinks that people are a little tired of new taxes, and they voted for causes such as kids and animals, which are certainly worthwhile. But does that come to the detriment, possibly, of upgrades for Jackson?
I think this is going to be a very tight vote. You had both Miami Mayor Tomas Regalado saying he wasn't supporting the Jackson bond, as well as Mayor Carlos Jimenez on Michael Putney's This Week in South Florida show on Sunday, saying he wasn't sure if that was the way to go about it and if that was the right number, et cetera. And given the turnout, the voter turnout, I mean, anyone that wants to vote, just go down. There's no lines.
What are you predicting, really low turnout?
If we get 10 or 11%, I'll be lucky.
Abysmal.
Out of the 1.3 million voters. These municipal off-year elections traditionally have abysmal voter turnout. And frankly, you only have Hialeah, Homestead, Miami Beach, and the city of Miami having races, and yet the Jackson issue is a countywide bond vote, so you're probably going to only get people or voters from those municipalities participating, or the super voter, the ones that never miss elections.
Why does the mayor, Tomas Regalado, why is he opposed to this bond being passed?
His feeling was he just wants to limit property taxes, and it would be a tax, though a small one, on your property tax. It would be reflected, and he just believes it's important to keep taxes as low as possible for the vulnerable and the poor in the city of Miami, which is quite extensive.
We're speaking with Dan Ricker and Dan Christensen, independent journalists and of the Watchdog Report and Broward Bulldog. If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you have questions or emails or questions or comments for them, the number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio at WLRN.org, radio at WLRN.org. We do have an emailer. Mary says, Republicans who are fed up with the Tea Party and feeling left behind just might cross over and vote for Charlie Crist, a moderate Republican who liked them and was shoved out of the party by the radicals.
I think she's right. I think there's a very good chance that'll happen. The question is, in what numbers?
2010 was an unusual election. You had people coming off the 08 election, which was which none of us will ever experience in our life. I mean, it was a movement, the election of Barack Obama. I mean, at the city of Miami, I had a woman in line to vote, break water, would not leave, even though we had an ambulance there, until she voted, and then they took her over to Mercy Hospital. I mean, I was sitting there, it was like watching the Marines take Mount Sarabachi in World War II. I mean, there was, and I don't know if she was an R or a D or what, but I mean, people were absolutely driven. In 2010, you had a blowback of the Tea Party people, the debt, the nation's debt, and some of the other things. But some of that's dissipating. In my opinion, as far as the intensity of the TPR, there's still a hardcore group out there. The debt still drives me nuts. It's the idea of $17 trillion or whatever. But it's slightly diminished, in my opinion, and I don't think you'll see the fervent turnout that you had in 2010, in 2014.
Although Charlie is a very unpopular figure amongst Republicans these days.
Right.
I wonder if the opposite might not be true, merely because it's Charlie Crist running.
Right. And on the Democratic side, he's not Rick Scott, which has the same
And he sort of has intensity. Ties with President Obama.
Right.
Yeah, he hugged him.
And I remember a lot of Democrats crossed over and voted for him for governor, Charlie Crist. Even though he was a Republican.
I believe you're right.
Yeah.
I believe you're right.
Again, our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN.
Or email radio at WLRN.org. Dan Christensen, what's this investment partner run Scott's Blind Trust? What does this have to do now with CyberGuard going back to CyberGuard?
Yes.
This is getting very complicated.
Yes, it's like a little mystery unfolding.
Yeah, well, it is. This was part of the story that unfolded as I was reporting it. But there's a guy named Alan Bazar, like Harper's Bazar or Bazar in Turkey. And he is a longtime crony of the governor's. As a matter of fact, he runs the governor's blind trust, and I use that phrase in quotes, because I don't know how blind it is, mainly because Mr. Bazar used to be his business partner. He was also a manager of Governor Scott's, another company that Governor Scott had called Richard L. Scott Investments, LLC, prior to the governor becoming governor. And the governor, since he took office, he created the blind trust, and he put this gentleman, Mr. Bazar, in charge of running it. Before, it appeared as if they were merely, there was a manager-investor relationship, meaning that Mr. Bazar was managing the governor's investments prior to and continued to do the same thing after he set up the blind trust, which is odd enough, I think, but it becomes significantly more when you see in this CyberGuard matter that both Mr. Bazar and the governor were investors together in CyberGuard through a company called Fernwood Partners. And all this is spelled out in SEC documents. So it seems strange that no one has begun to wonder about the blind trust and whether or not it is indeed a blind trust, or whether it's something that the governor has access to clearly through a man who is his friend and former business partner.
In the same organization that you've been talking about, yeah. CyberGuard.
Yes, yes. Through this Fernwood Partners, both of them are identified in SEC records as members, meaning beneficiaries, investors in this Fernwood Partners group. That's how the governor bought his initial stake in this back in 1999, I believe it was. He bought $3 or $4 million worth, and then they kept adding on. Ultimately, it looks like he invested about $10 million. It's hard to know precisely, but this gentleman, Mr. Bazar, was an investor with him.
We're speaking with, that was Dan Christensen, and he's founder and editor of Broward Bulldog, and Dan Ricker is the publisher and editor of The Watchdog Report. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and take your call. Stay with us.
Thank you.
35 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dan Christensen, and also Dan Ricker. Dan Ricker, if someone wants to receive the Watchdog Report, which is free, how do they go about it?
Publisher at watchdogreport.net, or just go to watchdogreport.net, and there's a tab where you can send me your email address. But just Google Watchdog Report, and I come up immediately.
And let's take a call or two. First up, it's Ron in Homestead. There's an election in Homestead today. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how's everybody doing today? Long-time listener, first-time caller, so thanks for that. I was calling, I just had a quick comment regarding the election going on in Homestead. I know there's been a lot of talk about how it's been very Miami, very a lot of mudslinging and just kind of very down in the trenches. But as a resident of Homestead, I have to say, you know, there's not a whole lot of, you know, fallout from that on the ground. Like, you know, the services are still there, city services are still running, and everything else. And I just feel like Homestead has been kind of stigmatized because of Mayor Bateman's arrest. And then from there, it's just, there's just been this domino effect of ha 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 Homestead.
Yeah, but you know, that you brought out a good point. Even though there's political turmoil, the services that the city delivers are still going on. And you could say that about the city of Miami. You could say
Hialeah
or Miami Beach.
Chicago.
Where during these elections, I mean, they annihilate each other. It makes it seem so-and-so is the devil or whatever.
So why is there so much animosity between these two candidates in Homestead? What's going on?
Well, you're in a smaller municipality. Many people know each other or have known each other for a long time. You know, Linda Bell had been a mayor. She lost to Bateman after her first term. Now she's a county commissioner. Now it's her husband, Mark, running. You know, the point is it's a small cast of characters, and bad blood seems to percolate among these in these municipal races quite quickly. I mean, I look at it back last April at Coral Gables. That was a vicious race in some ways. And it's not hard for political skeletons to come out in the closet and create some bad ill will.
I don't want to spend much time on it, but really is a water cooler issue I've been hearing at the station, and that's this Miami Dolphins and the bullying scandal. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't do sports. It's like the American Airlines Arena. All I want them to do is pay their rent. But no, it's a sad commentary. I mean, the Dolphins started out with high hopes. They had the three victories, and then they had a series of losses. Mm-hmm. It's like the team can't get a break. And then when you add the kind of the ugly nature, the ugly racial nature to something like this, it's not obviously conducive to bringing a team or, you know, taking them to the Super Bowl.
No, they're kind of imploded, I think, for this year. If anybody's hoping them to get in the playoffs, I don't think that's a realistic possibility anymore.
They've lost half their line.
But it will be interesting to see how this does play out. Is this just one, you know,
incident,
you know, with one, you know, bigot, goofball doing this? Or is it widespread?
Is it in the culture?
Do you have an email, Bonnie?
Yeah, Marcia wants to know why we're failing to include Nan Rich in the discussions of the governor's race. But you did mention.
I mentioned Nan, and you know, she was a solid legislator, but she's having a hard time raising money. She had a fundraiser a few weeks ago in South Miami at a local restaurant. But, I mean, she certainly doesn't have the name recognition of someone like Charlie Crist or Bill Nelson or, you know, Rick Scott.
I would argue that even if Charlie Crist was involved in this, while she may be the only announced candidate, she's still pretty much an unknown throughout the state. I would argue that even in Broward, she's not all that well known, in her district, certainly.
Let's move along to another caller. This is Jeff. He's in Weston. Hi there.
Hey, how are you today?
Good. Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that I've been a lifelong Republican that have decided to recently switch to being a Democrat because of all of the social issues that the Republican Party can't seem to get their arms around. I'm a fiscal conservative, but it seems like the party doesn't accept that as the guiding rule anymore, and I am a Charlie Crist fan.
So you are a Charlie.
You are a Charlie Crist fan?
Yeah, he was a great governor, in my opinion. I'm in the alternative fuel industry, and we worked closely with him and the Department of Energy back when he was governor, the governor's energy office. And Rick Scott abolished that commission, and so it's been much more difficult to get anything going. We've been fortunate to have a couple of industries come on board with us, but Governor Chris did a lot more than Governor Scott, in my opinion.
Okay, thanks for your call. And we'll move along to Michael. He's in Miami. Hi.
Yes, thank you for your show each day. Miami deserves it. However, I think these are just symptoms of a huge meltdown. The government shut down. I don't hear much about it anywhere. I'd like to hear more about it while we still can. Miami seems to be the beneficiary of worldwide financial success, but I don't know how long it's going to last. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, I think the concern has to be the fact that a lot of the real estate is being bought with these are cash deals. There's very little mortgage and that kind of stuff. And there's two things with the cash deals. One, it tells you that people are bringing money to America and to Miami because it's a safe location to preserve their cash position. But also, from a Miami historical standpoint, we've 3-4 decades of major, and I know this is kind of a verboten topic, but money laundering. You know, the ongoing war.
And real estate busts.
And real estate busts. But, I mean, there's a lot of money in South America and Central America that also is involved, to a certain extent, generated through drugs. And it has to go somewhere, and finding real estate in Miami is a safe bet.
Okay, and we'll move along. We've got Dan. He's in Pembroke Pines. Hi there.
Hi. I appreciate the show, and thanks for letting me comment on I'm a native Floridian. I live in Broward County. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I got no problem voting for Charlie Crist. I think he was a good, solid, moderate Republican that governed from the middle. And I'm a union guy. I'm an officer of my local, and I remember having conversations with other union officers that, we thought he was doing a good job. He didn't come in, and like I said, the perception with us was he governed from the middle, and he wasn't trying to move an agenda along. He was kind of populist with his decisions. He treated the teachers good, and I think, like your previous caller, who was a Republican, who had an alternate fuel something agenda where, these kind of things that would help the state of Florida, and, Governor Crist got on board with that kind of thing. And absolutely, positively, I can't say it enough that Rick Scott is an unmitigated disaster for this state. If anybody cares at all about this state and the future of it, this guy, if he set out to ruin it on purpose, I don't think he could have done a better job.
Okay, Dan.
And
thanks for listening to my comments.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You bet.
So before we go to the break, Dan Christensen, I just want to, you're expanding your board. You're in the process of expanding the board at Broward Bulldog, and you're reorganizing. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. Over the past year, myself and several members of a board of directors who joined recently, about a year ago, have been involved in rewriting our business plan. And we're hoping to sort of relaunch things, not in terms of the product that we turn out, but in terms of our business approach over the next few months. And we have several new board members, one of whom people in town might very well know well, Doug Clifton, who used to be the executive editor of the Miami Herald. He's been involved in the planning process as well. A guy named Norm Davis, who's a lawyer in town, well known, with Squire Sanders, who used to be a vice president at Channel 10 and has worked closely with Clarence Jones years ago, who was an investigative reporter for WPLG. And a guy named Joe Thomas, who's worked for the governor in the past, who does planning for NGOs and nonprofits. And they've all been a great help in joining us. And we're excited about where we're going to be going.
Yeah, congratulations, too, on your expansion. That was the voice of Dan Christensen, from founder and editor of the Broward Bulldog. That's browardbulldog.org. And we're with Dan Ricker. He's publisher and editor of the Watchdog Report, watchdogreport.net. One more short break, and we'll return.
And it is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dan Ricker, and Dan Christensen. Dan Ricker, you're a Coconut Grove resident. Fill us in on the Coconut Grove waterfront issues, and of course,
well, it's the development of Scotty's Landing. It's been very contentious. It's I think a 7-acre site that's 50 years, and then with another 2 15-year extensions, it's generated a huge amount of blowback. It's been pushed by Miami Commissioner Mark Sarnoff, who thinks it's a great deal. It fits in with the master plan that was done. It will generate a fair amount of money. Mayor Rigolato's for it. Most of the commissioners are for it because, you know, frankly, for the money it will bring in the general revenues. Now, that said, for many of the Groveites, and it is a citywide vote, so I expect it'll be like 80-20 where it passes. But for many of the Grove residents, it's too big. It's not thought out enough. The duration's a problem. But it's been an incredibly bruising political process, especially for Commissioner Sarnoff. He's lost that used to be his base, and he suffered some significant impact and loss of support among what had been traditionally strong supporters of him.
And what about this Crandon Park expansion, tennis center expansion?
Oh, that's a tennis center. That's a much more complex. That was voted on last November. Right now, the county commission is hearing both sides. The Matheson family that donated the land, Bruce Matheson was there. You know, they're arguing that, hey, there's certain covenants, certain restrictions, that when the land was donated, this isn't part of it. The tennis center says this is what we need to do to be competitive with Beijing and all the other places. So we'll see what happens. But I'm actually going to be more interested in who actually does the work, because there's a ton of lobbyists there, one of which is very close to Mayor Carlos Jimenez and actually drives him around. Rafael Garcia Toledo drives him around during the elections, and he's become a major lobbying force down there. So I'm keeping my eye on him.
So you're talking about the contractor. Who's going to get the contract?
Yeah, once that's resolved, if in fact it goes on, I'm going to be watching who's getting the money for this gigantic redo. That's like, this isn't going to happen. It'll take 6 years, apparently, for the first section to be done, because they have to stop every year for the tennis, the Sony tennis.
Right.
So they have to break everything down, stop, and they also are limited to the amount of footprint they can use for any renovation. So it's a logistics challenge. But I'm interested in who's going to get the contract and how much money.
Dan Christensen, besides the Broward Bulldog 4th Anniversary Fundraiser, any other Broward bulletins for us?
No bulletins. Just the fundraiser, which we're having Tuesday, November 12th at 5:30 to 8 at Vibe on East Las Olas Boulevard. It's, I believe, the address is 301 East Las Olas. And we're going to have a silent auction there with some interesting stuff that people might want to bid on, like a VIP Dolphins experience and various gift baskets and restaurant certificates, that sort of thing. So,
and to go, do you have to reserve or you just show up?
Well, if you can go online to our Facebook page, you go to Facebook and then type in Broward Bulldog, which will take you there, and there are all the details of the thing there, and we'd ask that you RSVP so we can tell them how many people are going to come. If you can't make it, you can contribute to us if you like what we're doing on the site, or you can send a check to our post office box, which is 23763 in Fort Lauderdale. That's 23763 Fort Lauderdale, 33307.
Okay.
Yes. And the Watchdog Report.
And for the Watchdog Report, I'm actually a for-profit.
We're having plugola here.
Yeah, I'm a for-profit.
Well, it's for a good cause.
And I live literally off the community, and you know, it ranges from $17 from, you know, a grandmother or whatever, to some corporate sponsorships, which I appreciate very much. But it's all that information is online at watchdogreport.net. But I'd like to make one last plug that The Inspector General selection for the Miami-Dade County is Mary Cagle, C-A-G-L-E. She's a former state prosecutor. They're doing her background check, and her name in December will be going to the county commission. So Mary Cagle, if everything goes well, good luck in your new capacity of watching over about $14 billion of public money.
Hey, I just wanted to say very quick that Dan Ricker does, he's for profit, but he does some, you know, very good work. I see him in Broward. He's all over the place. And
you're expanding into Dade.
Well, not yet. If we can raise sufficient money, we would like to, you know, we intend to expand into Dade County, but we have to have, we have to have money to pay people to do this.
Let's take another call or two. This is Herb. He's in Kendall. Hi.
Good afternoon. I want to pose this question to your two gentlemen, and then I want to make a comment. I've lived down here since 1971. I'm originally from Philadelphia, and Philadelphia was a very corrupt town and probably still is. What I want to know is, why do we get such horrendous choices, like the one for governor, the one for mayor, over and over again? When I talk to my friends, the first thing they think of when they think of local or state government is corruption. Corruption, corruption, everybody's got their hand in the till. Now, what do we need to set up so we get better qualified candidates than we get now?
Any comment, Dan Christensen?
Well,
this is the age-old question.
Yeah, it really is. And it is worse here, and it's worse now. I mean, I've been a reporter down here since the mid-70s, and it's worse now, significantly worse than it's ever been. What is the cause
for this?
What
makes you say that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just seems that every time I turn around, that's all I write about, you know, and that's all I see in the papers. And, the whole tenor of society is meaner than it used to be and tougher than it used to be.
And push limits.
Yeah. And while we have a very ingrained sense among some people here, among many people here, of civic duty and giving and stuff like that, it seems to be overshadowed by a culture of corruption that seemed somewhat confined to Dade County. It's no longer confined to Dade County.
It does have at least an active ethics commission. Yes.
I think part of
which
it
has a chilling effect on some people.
To some extent, but it doesn't have much bite to it.
I get more people ask me, why do I write so much about fraud and waste and abuse, etc.? And they go, well, look at all the fraud in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I said, listen, I can't control what goes on in Afghanistan and Iraq, but here in Dade County, you know, I'm in. But the flip side of it is, I think for a lot of people in South Florida, this, when it comes to some of this corruption and just general fraud, which is also corruption to a great extent, it started with Hurricane Andrew. And you know, after that, the city of Miami ended up writing off some $4 or $5 billion worth of FEMA money, or actually FEMA did, that went to the city of Miami and had kept it propped up for years in the 90s and subsequently led to a city manager going to jail and a couple of commissioners. But my point is that gave everyone the big taste of fraud, and everyone else was doing it, so I guess I better get involved in
I was going to say, we had plenty of crime before that, though, police corruption and stuff for years. I mean, it's been happening for decades now, and, I what's the reason?
So his question was, how do we get better candidates?
There's places like Katie Sorensen's Good Government Initiative at the University of Miami, where she has people that want to run for office go to learn how to do it correctly and ethically. I think that's a wonderful place, and a wonderful place that we could use, we could use more of. It could use more funding to train folks like that are coming in.
Well, we certainly want to thank the two of you.
Dan Christensen is founder and editor of Broward Bulldog, browardbulldog.org, fundraiser at Vibe Restaurant, November 12th, 5:30. Dan Ricker, publisher and editor of The Watchdog Report, watchdogreport.net. Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
And thanks for tuning in this hour. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical supervision from online producer Paul Leary. Free audio archives at our website, WLRN.org. Click on radio to proceed. And more information also at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is with a communications professor and co-author of the book, Dollarocracy: How Do Corporations and the Rich Affect Our Elections? And today's calendar, on this day in 1950, 63 years ago, the TV debut of You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. Housewife Phyllis Diller got her start as a contestant. Say the secret word, win $100. And on this day in 1954, 59 years ago, Tropical Storm Hazel becomes a hurricane. It killed some 1,000 in Haiti, 95 in the U.S., then struck Canada, killing 81, mostly in Toronto. One more while we recall the Praise the Lord Network. On this day in 1989, 24 years ago, evangelist Jim Baker is convicted of using his TV show to defraud followers of more than $150 million. He served a five-year prison term, was paroled in 1994. Wife Tammy Faye divorced him in 1992. Guess what? He's back in business in Branson, Missouri, still owes $6 million to the IRS. Our theme music created by Michael Levine. So, of course, we have to leave with a thought from Groucho Marx. Who else? Quote, age is not a particularly interesting subject. Anyone can get old. All you have to do is live long enough. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Stay with us. Up next, it's Here and Now from NPR News.